Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is John Wilson. John Wilson has served Baylor University and university libraries in a variety of roles since 1987, from fundraising to leading Baylor's Texas collection and university archives to his current role as interim dean of libraries. And now we're probably barely scratching the surface of the things you've done in your 31 years here at Baylor. John Wilson, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here on Baylor Connections today.
It's absolutely great to be here. Thanks for asking me to come.
Well, we've got a lot we can dive into, but I'll admit the first question that I thought of is we have a beautiful campus and there's a lot of nooks and crannies that I feel like we could still explore and discover. So I want to ask you, as someone who knows the libraries inside and out, if you're willing to reveal it, if it's not a secret, a state secret, do you have a favorite place on a campus, a favorite place for whether it's solitude or creativity or just beauty?
I would say the most obvious is the Armstrong Browning Library. Mm-hmm. And for years, some people said, well, it's hidden, or why is it at Baylor? And I can't believe it's on your campus. So that would be the first thing. Mm-hmm. Not only the architecture, but the paintings on the inside, which are generally from the Renaissance, as well as the contents, which are from the Brownings, both Robert and Elizabeth. Elizabeth tends to be my favorite, but It was really founded because of Robert's work. And then there's the Garden of Contentment, which is on the outside near the School of Music. And anytime you walk by and the weather's great, you're going to find students and faculty there who are reading or contemplating some sort, just having lunch. So that would be my first. The second would be the Texas Collection, which is my home. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably more a place of solitude in some ways. A great deal of study goes on there, but research as well. Last would be parts of Moody Library that I've grown fond of. I mean, that's where I started out years ago as head of government documents, which wasn't in the little piece that you had, but I think it's because of the innovative and creative areas that we're into, whether it be digitization, but TechPoint on the first floor, our audio, visual, sound booth. So we can do a podcast, that's one thing, or you can do a video and place it in any sort of a thesis or paper or program that you're doing. So I would say that, as well as the makerspace that's down there. It's probably a longer answer than you wanted.
That's great. A lot of places to check out. Absolutely. For people who haven't. Well, you mentioned Moody Library, and that's one thing, even as Baylor has changed, that's one area that for generations now, every Baylor student knows, every Baylor student has experienced in different ways. But that's just one small part of university libraries, albeit maybe the most visible part to most students. Can you just give us a little bit of a brief overview of what all is under the purview of university libraries?
Sure. There are actually seven libraries that fall under this category. Two of them, which are the Nursing School Library, which is in Dallas, and then the Law Library, they both fall under the dean, but we share the same online catalog. So we're connected that way, as well as with other services. But generally, there's the Armstrong Browning Library, the Texas Collection, the Keston Center, which I don't know if you're aware of or not.
No.
It's on the third floor of the Carroll Library, and that deals with Russian dissident material that came to us from Oxford. So by dissident, it really means it was the suppression of religion in the old Soviet Union, and this was the type of material that was produced by believers.
Oh.
Fascinating, and most of our researchers come from around the world to use it. The majority of the material can be in Russian, Polish, Hungarian, Czech. So you get the idea. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating library. And then the Pogue Collection as well. So that should total seven, if I'm recalling correctly.
That sounds right. Well, I know you and your colleagues bring a sense of mission beyond running them daily and keeping everything in working order. What is that sense of mission that you and your colleagues share when you think about what it is you're doing here at Baylor?
Sure. It's really a great question. The Baylor Libraries support excellence in teaching and learning. We enhance research and discovery, and we are fostering partnerships all the way around the campus. So I think most importantly, and this is something I realized just within the last year or so, maybe I'm a little slow on the uptake, but I think what libraries are doing now is we're facilitating the creation of knowledge. Most people, when they walk in Moody or any place else, they think, what are the students doing? They're studying. I would say that's a small portion of what the students are doing. Really, they are creating knowledge as well as our faculty. And I think the difference between 15 years ago would be we're proactive rather than reactive. At one time, we would sit behind a desk and wait for a question. That isn't the case anymore.
What kinds of things are you looking for to be proactive?
I think, first of all, with regard to teaching, we want to be involved in what goes on in the classroom and be of assistance to our faculty and really be there as a partner. I think research is absolutely key to our Tier 1, R1 aspiration. Mm-hmm. But even if we weren't headed in that direction, and I firmly believe that we should be, is that undergraduate students want to be involved in research, and they want to understand the process. And there's no better way to do it than through research and being in the library and starting that process.
We are visiting with Baylor's Interim Dean of Libraries, John Wilson, today on Baylor Connections. And tell us a little bit about something. What's something we might take for granted? I think it's easy to take as a student the library for granted. But is there something that, even as a broader university community, that you see maybe a lack of understanding about?
Well, this might surprise you. And it surprised me when I had to sit down and think about it. Space in the library.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a long time, libraries were thought of as a storehouse. Put books on the shelf. When you need them, you come and get them, and you leave. You may use them there. But that isn't what a library is about, particularly not Baylor's libraries. We compete for space. Moody Library was built when we had a student body between 6,000 and 7,000 students. Wow. Right now, we're a community of learners of over 17,000. So you can imagine that there is competition for space. And so we have different types of space. You know, it seems relatively simple, but in many respects, the library, it's an organism. You know, it changes, it develops, it grows. One thing goes out of focus and something else comes in.
We're visiting with John Wilson, Baylor's Interim Dean of Libraries. You mentioned collections a little bit. What is a collection specifically?
Well, it really is a grouping of similar items together. And that's a collection. So a good example would be with the Armstrong Browning Library. You have 19th century English literature primarily focused on the Brownings. Okay? But within some of our other areas, the Texas collection, it's much broader than that. So you have Texana, which, I mean, it's not a well-used term, but it means anything dealing with or about or written by a Texan.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be journals, magazines, dime novels, maps, books, fiction, nonfiction, biographies, sheet music. It goes on and on and on. So that's a collection, but there are collections within. One area that is fascinating are Texas cookbooks. We've been collecting them for years and have over 7,000. Now, if you're not a Texan, which I didn't grow up here, who would ever think you could have over 7,000 cookbooks dealing with Texas cookery or cuisine? But we have them.
That's great. Visited with John Wilson, and you spent many years in the Texas collection, and whether it's cookbooks or images or old newspaper articles or what have you, going back from Baylor and throughout the state of Texas. What role does that play in promoting research on campus? Because I know you have people on campus who come here, but it's also people from all around the country. As you said earlier, when you talk about the Russian collection.
Absolutely. I would say I know within the month of June at the Armstrong Browning Library, they have 4 visiting scholars that will be here. On any given month throughout the year at the Texas collection, we do have visiting scholars, but people come from all over the state as well as the U.S., and we have several international users that come, occasionally from Australia.
Wow.
We had one from the U.K. last year as well. Sometimes they come because we have Branch Davidian material or Davidian. There's a difference between the two. And so they're coming to research because we have the largest known archive of Davidian material as well as Branch Davidian. So we get the Davidian sect to come here and look at this material, which is most people wouldn't think about, but that's why we're here. I would say in our special collections, whether it's the Pogue material, Keston, Texas, I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so people begin to know research libraries for special collections and not for just your holding of books, how many you have, or journals.
We are visiting with John Wilson, Baylor's Interim Dean of Libraries, and I want to give a little preview because as we get later on in the program, you have brought some materials here that we're going to experience, and we haven't done this on Baylor Connections before. So I take it this goes back a few years, what you've brought. So we'll just give a little sneak peek that that's coming up a little bit later as we go on the program today. But, John, well, you mentioned an important word, and that's research. And Baylor is growing in those aspirations, approaching whether you call it Tier 1 or R1 status. What are the demands on a library system of a large, vibrant research university like Baylor already is and what it's becoming?
Well, they certainly are different than they were 15, 20 years ago. Students would come in, they would study, faculty would do the same. Everything has changed, and the library has to change with it because technology has changed the way we do research, the way we look at things. Using the phone that you have right here on the desk, you can go into YouTube and take a look at, figure out how to do almost anything from a 7-minute video. So with regard to answering your question, you know, first of all, the space has to be inviting and up to date. It needs to be clean, which is really important. We don't think about it much, but it is important. Classrooms are terribly important. And one of the things that we've just opened last June is something called an active learning lab, which means there's no front, there's no back. It's pretty much interactive, and students can connect with the faculty member using technology pretty easily. It can be in pods or groups of one. As long as you have your device, you can connect to it. So collaboration is important. Individual space, as I said, quiet space, group space. One of the crazy things, of course, are outlets. Are there enough for all of the devices and spaces you have? Whiteboards have become whether they're white or not, sometimes they're not, and they're made of different material now. Glass, as a matter of fact, is what we're using. 24-hour access, as I said, is important. Digital collections have become, I think, one of our hallmarks, and we've been doing this for at least 18, 19 years. Print collections, believe it or not, are still valuable, and our students still use it, as well as some of our faculty. So easy access to material. Students don't want to wait a long time to find something. They don't care how it looks in the catalog. They just want to be able to get to the information as quickly as possible to do the things they want to do. One of the newer things we've added is a makerspace, which many libraries have them. We made ours much larger, I think, in June of this year, and then we did something quite innovative. We have a contractual agreement with Maker's Edge, which is right downtown, catacorner across from the public library. So if we do not have a piece of equipment that maybe a student needs to be certified on because it can be dangerous, we give them a pass. It gets them in there free for 2 weeks. We didn't know how successful it would be. We've already sold out of all of our passes.
Wow.
We've had to buy new ones. It's been an incredible experience for our students. Again, I said it's about creating knowledge, and so it's amazing to see what our students can do sometimes.
We've talked a lot about the foundation being in place as Baylor moves towards R1 status. A lot of professors and students are doing great research, even though Baylor wasn't necessarily talking about terms like R1 10 or 15 years ago. You were improving the technology then. What are some of the ways that that has How much of a focus has that been for you all? Maybe not as a percentage of your job, but just to how important has that been?
I would say somewhere around 2005 is when we began with the Riley Digitization Center and realized that we needed to not only get in the game, but with a strong emphasis, we had to provide the equipment as well as the expertise. And so in a way, technology is one of our I think, greatest strengths. We experiment with it. We try to make certain we're improvising. And if something doesn't work, we go back and look at it. In fact, failure sometimes is a very good teacher. So sure. Just because something doesn't work one way, it doesn't mean it won't work another. But in answering the question, it doesn't matter whether you're in STEM, the humanities, law, social sciences. Technology is certainly, it undergirds everything we do.
Well, as someone who's in the kind of knowledge creation business, how exciting, I know it's been a lot of work, but what's it mean to you to be a part of Baylor at this time when we are talking about that Tier 1 status? You talked about the importance of that earlier.
I think technology is part of our culture at the libraries, and we've been, I think we embrace it. We don't become overwhelmed by it. I think we have such incredible expertise within the libraries as well as within Baylor. If we don't know it, we know where we can find it. So it really is part of the fabric of who we are.
Visiting with John Wilson here on Baylor Connections, heading into the final few moments of the program. I want to ask you, are there visions you have as far as which way things will be moving in the years ahead? Are there priorities that you see coming more to the forefront, or have we maybe discussed those already?
No, we really haven't discussed. Mm-hmm. I think one of the first things, we have a collection of about 2.6 million physical items. Wow. We're out of room. Mm-hmm. And I told you how many students we have and how large the building was, the capacity. So we need to move lesser used items off-site. And the administration is aware. Yeah. And they're interested. You know, we're in a relationship here where the administration really listens and pays attention. And I'm terribly grateful for that. So off-site storage, which allows us to clear space out for our users. So the plans right now with the architect is on the first floor of Moody Library is those become two great reading rooms, and there'll be half shelves instead of full height shelves. That area is surrounded by glass. Yeah. And it was meant to be a beacon of light at night. Mm-hmm. And so you want people to see others studying, working, interacting. What better way to do it than to have your showcase right there? So that's the first thing that we plan on doing, as well as renovating the rest of the building. I would say some other things. We're going to emphasize our special collections and continue to do so because they make us unique. No one else has a collection of Browning materials like we do. The Texana we have is exceptional. As well as the Keston Center. There's no other place in the world that's doing what we're doing. So technology, we'll continue to push forward in those particular areas, always looking to see how we can improve. I would say the last thing would be building better relationships with our faculty and with different groups. One area that I can just share with you is the Writing Center, which used to be in the basement of Carroll Science, mm-hmm. opened on Monday as the University Writing Center on the second floor of Moody Library. And through a partnership with Dean Nort, we mm-hmm. were able to do this. And so I think it's going to change the way our students write and the accessibility, because it opens at 9 and closes at 7. And they can now serve probably three times more people wow. at a time. They went from 400 square feet to 2,400 square feet. Make a difference?
Yes, nice little jump.
Yeah.
That's great. We'll look forward to seeing some of these things and more in the months and years ahead. Visiting with John Wilson. And John, final couple of minutes now. And I saved a question, I think a fun one to end up with. You mentioned How many different pieces in the libraries? You say 2.6 million?
2.6.
I know you've poured through each one of them, so I want to know.
Have not.
Have not. Okay, well, close. Well, what is your favorite find? What's something that you found that most wowed you or most spoke to you when you found it? And I'm pleased to see you've brought it in here.
I did. I thought it was too much fun, even though we were on the on a podcast, not to do it. This is the second letter of Cortez that was sent back to the King of Spain. This is the Latin translation, and it was printed in 1524.
And we've got a bound book here.
Bound book,
1524. I'm looking at something 500 years old right now.
Just about. It's going to have its 500th birthday coming up.
Wow.
And it's not the oldest thing in our collections, but this one is intriguing because anything dealing with Texas, in some ways, Mexico is near and dear, or should be, to all Texans, because there is a great influence there from the Spanish as well as the Mexican heritage. So this really was sent back to the King of Spain, as I said, and we received it right here. You can begin to see it was something called the McGregor Plan, and that's how we received it. And would you like to guess how much this is probably worth to this day and how many there are?
I have no idea where to begin.
Okay. Well, I probably shouldn't tell you, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $40,000.
Wow.
And I know of 17 copies that exist, and more than half of those are in Europe. And there's, as far as I know, there's not another copy in Texas.
I'm amazed at how well preserved it is, and the images in it are still, they still pop off the page.
Yeah, it's surprising the quality of paper. It's a linen-based paper, and that's why it survived time so well. If it was a wood pulp paper, like a newspaper today, it would be yellowed within 6 months. Yeah. But the quality of the paper is what makes this survive, and it'll be around another 500 years easily.
That's exciting. So you never know what you're going to find in university libraries.
That's absolutely right, from high tech to old school. But it is fun.
Well, you can't. The high tech is great, but it's that bed of knowledge, that foundation of knowledge, I should say, that we've been able to benefit from over the years too.
Absolutely.
Well, John Wilson, thank you so much. Thank you for bringing this in here. That's something really, really different that I didn't expect on the program today. A lot of fun, and I appreciate that.
Well, I'm delighted to be here and appreciate you asking.
Well, thank you very much. John Wilson, Baylor's Interim Dean of Libraries, our guest today on Baylor Connections. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.